This is Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. I'm your host, Amber Kahn. This year, the 2020 census faces some real challenges. Not only is it happening in the middle of a pandemic, there are fears. A December 2019 study by the Urban Institute found that nearly one-third of adults are extremely or very concerned about how their answers to the 2020 census will be used and with whom they will be shared. That mistrust is highest among non-white and Hispanic adults and those living in immigrant households, wary of the Trump administration's using data to enforce immigration policies. But that's not all. In March, the Pew Research Center released their latest survey on census attitudes, up slightly from January. 59% of Americans say they, quote, definitely will respond to the census, which could lead to an undercount of 4 million people. To boost the response rate, which currently sits at just 60%, the U.S. Census Bureau is partnering with hundreds of corporations and community groups, including religious ones. But with no religion question on the census, why is the Census Bureau asking faith communities for help?
There's no more trusted voices than the religious leaders in this nation. So we appreciate the partnership, the messaging, and the effort that you all do. And we will do our share, and we hope that you can help us in that. And by working together, we can communicate the right message and build the trust, because the census is, in fact, built on trust and engagement. And we appreciate all our partners and your support.
That was Dr. Stephen Dillingham, director of the U.S. Census Bureau. He spoke at a summit for faith leaders that was organized in part by Shagufta Ahmed, who oversees the Bureau's faith outreach. I first met Ahmed 4 years ago, and in the spirit of disclosure, until January 2018, we both sat on a board of a national interfaith organization. Ahmed usually works at the White House's Office of Management and Budget, but when an opportunity came up to work on the census, she jumped. The temporary assignment allows her to express a deep respect for the U.S. Census, handed down from her father, a Pakistani-American who was fiercely private, but who made an exception when it came to the census. We began our conversation with this question. Why is it so important to be counted?
Well, first of all, the need is because there's a mandate. There, Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution requires that we conduct a census of the population of everybody living in the United States every 10 years because it informs apportionment. So every 10 years, we use those population counts to inform the number of representatives in the House of Representatives. And that's why there's an absolute need to do that. But the other reason is for the uses of census data. It's really like the civic responsibility, first and foremost, representation of your community. And it's a way of saying you count. And if you don't get counted, you're going to have a less than accurate representation in Congress. And you want to take advantage of that. Second, as I mentioned, census data really provides critical access to programs, and your community is counting on you to respond.
Can you draw a sharper line between what the data that you collect, how that informs policy? What do you need this data for, and how is it actually used in public policy?
Nothing can illustrate it better than the current pandemic circumstances. So, I mean, we're all watching the news. We're glued to whatever internet platform, print source. And we're looking at maps all day long to figure out where the hotspots are, for example, when it comes to the COVID pandemic. You can't figure out what a hotspot is in the country without knowing about population data. The only place you can find that accurate count is the census that occurs every 10 years. So the information that we're using to respond to this emergency situation right at this moment in time is informed by census data that was provided in the last census. So our ability to be better prepared in terms of federal emergency response programs, even the tools that are being used to determine where hospitals are located, for example, when you're trying to develop, for example, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Programs, what was once called the Food Stamp Program or the TANF benefit, Pell Grants, for example. And that's why we're asking information across the entire country. That's why we're enlisting the help of what we call census partners, or like ambassadors, to really relay the importance in all communities, whether they be tribal, rural, urban. We want to make sure all of those communities are counted, because all of those funds affect those communities.
Before the census came out this year, there was quite a bit of controversy around what was being asked and how the information and data would be used. Can you just unpack a little bit what that controversy was about and whether they're still coming up as an issue of resistance from communities that may have concerns about how government uses data?
We definitely have a lot of fears about what types of questions are being asked. And specifically, for example, is one of the questions we get pretty often is, does the 2020 census ask about your citizenship status? And no, the 2020 census will not ask you or anyone in your household if you are a U.S. citizen. Similarly, people ask, well, then are non-citizens counted in the U.S. census? Yes, absolutely. Everyone counts. Everyone living in the U.S., including non-citizens. So like you and I both come from immigrant communities. We all know we have cousins coming from all different places in the world, or aunts and uncles and cousins who come and stay for extended periods of time. They're counted. Even if they're foreign citizens living here for the purposes of going to college, they're counted. The other question that we often get, I hear this a lot in faith communities that I work with, and definitely hear it very much so in the Muslim community, the Hispanic Latino community. Will my answers be shared with law enforcement, or will they be used against me? No, absolutely not. We do not share the information that you provide with law enforcement entities, and it's never used against you. It's pretty clear. We cannot even share information with local law enforcement agencies, let alone federal law enforcement agencies. So that means very clearly, not the FBI, not the CIA, not the Department of Homeland Security, not ICE. One of the other questions I often get is, will the 2020 census ask me to identify my religion? No, absolutely not. While we ask about race and ethnicity, we don't collect any sort of information about religious affiliation. And that's because there's a 1976 law that explicitly prohibits the Census Bureau from requiring anyone to disclose their religious affiliation.
Are you also encountering resistance in more traditional and conservative faith communities where there is a suspicion of big government?
I think mistrust and distrust has no political affiliation, to be frank. I think I was reading a book before taking on this assignment about the first census, and George Washington in this book attributed some of the hesitation to participating to mistrust and fear of affiliating with the government in a data collection. I mean, this is in the inception of our country, so nothing has really shifted. We've always been a little bit apprehensive about these things. And I think that that's not unique to one group over the other.
Have you seen a greater interest in the census as the country is confronting a crisis?
We're all caught up in the same moment. And it's been kind of really interesting to see right at this moment in time, under our prior outreach strategies, we would be doing everything in person. Outreach would be happening in person in mosques and synagogues and temples and churches. And now we're on Facebook, we're on Skype, we're on Google Hangout. The one thing that has not changed, Amber, is that all of our diverse faith traditions continue to inspire us to serve our neighbor. And that call to action has been sustained, if not amplified, in this current environment. We've been telling folks that one way to serve your faith community is within the safety of your own home is to fill out your census forms and encouraging your friends and neighbors to do the same. And we try to really emphasize that when you help someone be counted in your community, you ensure that this information can help shape billions of dollars that comes to your community, you know, in times of need. And when you serve your neighbors at this most difficult time and make sure they're counted, we can be better prepared for tomorrow's disaster today. There's one thing I really do want to emphasize, and for me, and I, we talked about this personally, and I have to say, for me, this is a pretty powerful message. As an American Muslim, I'm always looking for my narrative in this country. And one of the ways to reflect your narrative in this country is by being counted. And by being counted, your story is reflected in the history of America. And when you complete the census, you are alongside diverse members of the American community. And you want to make sure you're a part of that nation's history.
There are also lots of historical references in different faith traditions to the census, particularly in Christianity. I mean, the role of a census is something that has played a role in civilizations and in societies for well over 2,000 years.
Absolutely. From what I read, the census is mentioned in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. I know in the tradition of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, he conducted a census, and Umar ibn Khattab, his a pretty important leader in Islam, establish a regular census to help determine how to redistribute resources in society. And it sounds a lot like the purpose of the U.S. Census. So I think this is something faith communities often do well. They tie messages about the importance of a census to their faith tradition, and particularly how resources in serving your fellow neighbor is a very strong message that I've seen resonate pretty well with faith communities, and people seek comfort in that tradition.
What inspired you to take this short-term assignment with the Census Bureau?
I grew up in a home with a large family, and my father is an immigrant to the United States from Pakistan. And for a variety of different reasons, he had a lot of hesitation with sharing beyond what was absolutely necessary with the government or, frankly, anyone. I grew up in the 1980s with a shredder in my house and regularly shredding documents in my house because there was concern about violations of privacy. So I was really taken aback when my dad said we needed to get together and fill out the census together. And I was just like baffled by my father, who never wanted to share, wanted to make sure we shared, and we shared together. And I just remember asking him why. And he said, this is when we get counted. This is when we get heard. This is public policy. And we want to make sure that they understand our needs. I was like, my fiercely protective dad is making us share all this information about our family in the census. And so you can imagine that it was bookmarked in my mind. And so when I had an opportunity to participate in the census campaign, I said, I want to do it. And I got to say, I feel like I fell in love with America all over again.
That was Shagift Ahmed, Manager of Faith Outreach for the U.S. Census Bureau. Coming up after the break, producer Kimberly Winston takes a closer look at how faith leaders connect the dots between the census and religious beliefs. This is Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices.